You're listening to AI InfoStories, real stories behind real ML challenges from real companies. This is Almog. I'm a cloud and ML infrastructure innovator.
This is Amit. I'm an AI research leader. In each episode, we will host a different guest who will share a story from their journey about the challenge they faced, how they solved it, and what the future holds for us. Let's get started.
Hey, today we are with Hin. Hin is the head of ML platform at DuoDash, and with Brian. Brian is a software engineer in the ML platform team. Hi guys, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, thank you.
Pretty good. I'm excited for the first podcast.
That's exciting. Can you, maybe Brian, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, sure. I've been at DoorDash for about 3.5 years now, and my career has been all over the place. But in short, like, I used to be a machine learning practitioner, built models, and I switched over to the software engineering side a year ago, just because I really realized that I enjoy the scaling of my machine learning operations more so than I did the actual model training. That I'm really loving it so far. I just found a niche in feature storage that I really liked.
Cool. And Hin, what about you? What brought you to the ML Infra world?
Yeah, so I've been with DoorDash for about 2.5 years-ish, joined right at the beginning of the COVID-19, currently leading the machine learning platform team. It's been a fun ride so far of building an ML platform almost from the ground up. Before DoorDash, I was at LinkedIn and spent many years there focusing on like the data infrastructure, as well as machine learning infrastructure at LinkedIn as well. I got really into machine learning infra toward the end of my time there at LinkedIn, and the opportunity at DoorDash came up to come in and help build a team as well as the platform. So that's why I'm really, this is an exciting area for me, and I've been learning a lot. Happy to have a chat with you guys this morning.
Thank you. So this is like a very exciting and vibrant area. And every other day we hear about new stuff and new titles and new roles. So how's your typical day look like?
My day is, part of my role is leading the team and figuring out what direction of the platforms will be. So a lot of it is managing the team as well as talking to customers. We are at, right now we're doing like next quarter planning. So looking toward 2023, how we think about what the platform needs to be as we move forward. Like you mentioned, so this field is evolving very quickly. So we want to figure out how can we incorporate some of the best practices and new technologies into the platform to best support our in-house customers and their use cases.
Yeah, as for me, I guess like the first thing I do when I wake up is go through our alerts and like wake up in a cold sweat, like hoping that I don't see like 500 alerts or messages. Next is the giant pile of onboarding requests. And then if I get a chance, spend some time thinking about what we can do next and how we can take feature storage to the next stage and improve our feature engineering so that we can really go to that next level. And I guess like most importantly, trying to figure out how to reduce the volume of alerts and reduce the amount of support we have so that we can be like truly self-service and like users don't really have to think about it anymore.
Awesome. Sounds a bit stressful, but also very interesting work. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot better now than it used to be, but for a while I was like up in a cold sweat every day.
I hope it will change soon enough. Awesome. So let's move on to the main part of the show, which is we would like you to present some real life challenge that you had and afterwards the solution. Hin, can you tell me what challenge you chose to present?
Yeah, today we did be discussing the challenge around scaling a feature store, essentially. It's a very fascinating story and journey, a lot of learnings for us. Some of these interesting challenges will only come up when you start operating at scale. That's when, you know, you can't really find obvious solutions out there and you have to tailor your solution based on the needs and the use cases that you have to deal with. So that's the one that we're going to be focusing and sharing. And then Brian is one of the folks that are actually looking at the NAND, building out the next generation of this feature store to help us be able to scale better in the future, as well as being more cost efficient as well.
So Hin, maybe an intro for those who don't know what the feature store is, what is the usage?
Sure. At a high level, a feature store, you can think of it as a database. It could be a key value store and whatnot, depending on your needs. But mostly people are using key value kind of storage engine for this. It's designed to store features, right? Machine learning features that can be retrieved to feed into the models for performing predictions and mostly for online prediction use cases. And we have a lot of those at DoorDash, right? The moment you log into a DoorDash website, you'll see a lot of recommendations and whatnot. And in order to generate those recommendations, they will have to like do a lot of predictions in terms of what you like, what you don't like, and whatnot. And that process will require to fetch a lot of features from the online feature store and low latency. That's one of the key aspects of the feature store is to provide very low latency retrieval of features at scale, right? Across all the many millions of users ordering food on DoorDash each day, each morning, at lunchtime, and so on.
So it sounds like it's fairly widely used. So what was the issue with scaling this infrastructure? Like, it's also pretty new, I would say, newish concept.
Yeah, I think that the feature store concept is fairly new. However, there's a lot of companies are now focusing on building commercial solutions and whatnot. But 2.5 years ago, it was not many available solutions. So a lot of companies like us, when we started on a journey, it's relying on some of the existing technology to build out the feature store solutions. And for us, it's like, originally we picked Redis as our feature store for a couple of reasons. One of them is the low latency aspects, and it fits into the key value kind of storage engine very nicely. It works well at the beginning, but as, like I mentioned, as we scale in terms of the number of use cases, the number of features, as the business grows and all that good stuff, then, you start to see cracks in terms of efficiency, in terms of areas that we can do better and whatnot. And Brian can talk more about this and also highlight it in the blog that I'm sure we probably will reference it at some point in time. Brian, maybe you can share some of the interesting challenges that you have seen and observed since you joined the team in the last year, year and a half.
Yeah. So I think just like mirroring a lot of what he intends, Redis is awesome. It's super fast and it's super performant. But it's just really expensive because you're storing everything in memory. And then, like you said, once you get to a scale, pretty much every dollar you put in it is going up linearly in cost. And then, so it's going up linearly at a pretty high rate. A lot of the, I think, main priorities when they first introduced the new storage format were to like improve performance and to reduce costs. And it just so happened that those two coincided with kind of the way that we decided to store our features from them.
That's really fascinating. Maybe we'll take a little bit step back. So your feature store is basically storing the data before you're doing the predictions, right? Are we referencing for a feature store for only the online data, or also are we hosting like the historical data in the feature store? How is your solution look like?
So we're mostly storing just data for online models, just because that's really the only use case where you need to make predictions with that high latency. And then for offline storage, we tend to rely on Snowflake and S3. And it's just cheaper and easier to fetch it that way, especially with the nature of offline predictions. They tend to be fetched and matched, and kind of OLAP storage works better for that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the concept of feature store for us is evolving as well. And also as an industry, like you mentioned, it could be the feature store is designed ideally to cover both online and offline or batch features. Ideally, provide that abstraction around all those features, whether regardless of when they store and how they retrieve. I think that's an ideal way of thinking about it. For us, a lot of our use cases are online. So we think that our feature store is online, those use cases. But I think overall, it's a big picture. It's good to think from that, from those perspectives for both batch and online features.
Okay, so you said you had problems with the Redis as the technology that is running the feature store, and you said there are different holes. Can you elaborate a little bit about the problems that you had, if you have any maybe story about that?
Yeah, so I think we've been using Redis for a long time now, and the scale has pretty much drastically expanded since we wrote that blog post. But generally, some of the issues are, like, the number one issue is just cost, right? There's no getting around how expensive it is. And using memory as durable storage is just not, like, not super smart. And because there's, like, lots of modes of failure, and it's your, I guess you always have to maintain a fleet of replicas. So your cost ends up being like 2x the cost of storage in general. But other issues are that it's actually, we use Redis on ElastiCache in AWS. So we're not, like, directly managing the clusters ourselves. And one of the issues with that is that when you need to upscale a cluster, it really eats up the CPU and causes a lot of shuffling. And then so the cluster is just in a degraded state for an extended period of time. And the bigger the cluster gets, the longer the maintenance operations take. So we have to do all sorts of other side migration operations in the background. And another issue is that because storage is so expensive on Redis, we have to implement a lots of short TTLs and automatic expiration of values. So if some feature pipeline goes down for 7 days or whatever TTL we set, the feature store just starts evicting values and our models will suffer degraded performance. And so that's, like, some of the core issues we've been facing in the last few years.
All right. So I'm pretty intrigued. So we are saying that Atudash, you guys built, like, a feature store, which is differently and focusing on the online, and you replaced the Redis with something you built internally. So what did you build?
I wouldn't say we replaced Redis. We still use Redis a lot, but I think we realized that in terms of, like, cost per, I guess, byte stored, not everyone needs to have ultra low latencies and, like, super high availability or anything like that. And then so we provided an alternate option with CockroachDB pretty recently. And we've been testing that out for the last 9 months or so.
But also add to Brian, before we explored the CockroachDB, that was an effort to step back and think about what are some innovations that we can do to reduce the cost, right? Because the number one factor that Brian brought up was about cost. So we took a step back and look at the way we store features, the way we organize data, the features on the Redis itself. And it was highlighted in a blog that we actually figured out a different way of storing features in a more efficient manner. So therefore it uses less bytes and therefore it reduces the latency of retrieving the features. So that was some of the optimization that was highlighted in the blog. And that helped a lot in terms of reducing costs as the first step. But also Brian highlighted that not all use cases need that very low latency in terms of milliseconds. So we then pivot to, okay, what other solution that we can use for those kind of use cases? And that's what Brian alluded to with the work that we've been doing of exploring CockroachDB as the, not a replacement, but in addition to Redis, because we want to be able to support a wide range of use cases. And
so basically for data scientists, they're going to be a unified, like, API way to work, or the one who's working on the infrastructure, but at some point it might work with one database and at some point it might work with another.
Yeah, we've actually tried to do our best to abstract away the storage layer from a lot of our data scientists. We just published another blog post recently on something called Fabricator, our internal feature engineering and feature registry. And then so what we do is just, we can just try to let users specify fields. Some teams have, like, very specific requirements, so they can set up those configurations for all their features. and other users just don't really have any specific requirement. So we just point them to general storage, and on our serving layer for online models that we expose to other teams, the storage is completely abstracted away, where our feature prediction service will just figure out in the background where our feature is being stored and how to pull all of them together.
And who is using the feature store? Is it like data scientists or data engineers?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of a ton of people. It's not really data engineers because it's mostly focused on online prediction. We have a couple of different types of practitioners. We have software engineers, machine learning engineers, and data scientists. And then they all work together in tandem to launch a service. Sometimes they'll be working together in teams, like the search team, for example, has like a whole swath of like software engineers, machine learning engineers, and research scientists. I would say the main distinction is that machine learning engineers are more focused on the implementation and, I guess, bringing a model, machine learning model, up to the needs of a production scaled service that's facing ours externally, and understanding those challenges so that the machine learning researchers can focus more on actually developing the model and finding signal for what features would be useful in doing that kind of R&D. And so they tend to not be as involved with the actual deployment of infrastructure.
If I'm a data scientist or data engineer, how should I use it? Like, I am building my features with Pandas and just hit save, or maybe I'm using your internal, is it part of the feature store to do the transformation? How does it look like?
Cool. Yeah. So we have this internal library called Fabricator. It's pretty much an abstraction for feature engineering and feature registry. And we support Snowflake created features, PySpark, and Pandas. And so what it does is you just save the data and transform it in an arbitrary way, as long as it conforms to a key value lookup idea. The idea is that we use something called like entities, which is, let's say you're a consumer and you have a consumer ID. Your entity is like ideas like consumer ID, like Almog, consumer ID, like Amit. And then we use that to create like a key value pair for a specific feature to a user or like some other entity, like a restaurant ID or something like that. And then as long as it conforms to like a basic data format, it'll get saved to S3, and our feature registry will detect that first feature. And then we have a separate orchestrating service that kind of will continuously check for new features and existing features and upload that to the store according to the rules set in the registry.
That's really interesting. So your feature store basically hiding all of the internal implementation of how you store it and how you're creating the key and where you store it, and provide the data scientist a unified API that is connecting transparently with your feature engineering library. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. It used to be kind of the Wild West, where I think when I first joined, every team was in charge of implementing their own database and storing their own features. And I think it's only like since he joined that there's been more focused effort to create like a single API for all teams to use.
A common challenge that I hear that many companies are facing when introducing this new fancy shining technologies is onboarding. How do you guys onboard new users and new developers to this new platform?
Well, yeah, I would say it's constantly a challenge figuring out how to best onboard people, because there's some in-between ground between making things really simple and enabling the advanced use cases. We do actually generally have a pretty white glove approach in general, where we're like very customer oriented and obsessed. And that's one of the core engineering values of DoorDash. And so we try really hard to guide through like new teams and disseminate information. And generally what we found is that you just really need to onboard a couple people in the team, and then the team will take care of itself over time and just maintain contacts. I think the bigger challenge is trying to keep in tune with customer needs and how the existing use cases don't really fit. Because I think what happens when you have a service that's been around for a while, people just get used to it and figure out ways to hack around it versus thinking of how can we improve this together. So I think the hard part after the onboarding is like figuring out what's wrong with our onboarding, because I think the people being onboarded tend to be pretty new and don't really have strong opinions on what needs to be changed or done yet. And then I think the hard part is actually just the part after onboarding. And we've also invested a ton into building out documentation, thought strings, like tons of tests, and pretty much making it as fail-proof as possible. But things will still happen, but We have a large dedicated support channels in Slack with a large army of engineers who are on support.
Yeah, that sounds like the story of my life, like product market fit and how you iterate around solutions.
Yeah, very much.
Awesome. Let's move to the last part. And I would like to ask you guys, what's next for this project? What do you see the future of this project?
Yeah, I think it's all about staying ahead of the customer's needs. And then the other part is managing costs. Like I mentioned, when you start onboarding scales, cost is becoming a big factor. And the other, and efficiency is a very key as part of how we move forward. And I think the other part that we want to look into is in terms of the insights of how features being used across the various use cases. I think those insights, that when we start spending more time of generating, figuring out those insights, I suspect that we're able to be more innovative of figuring out how to be even more efficient. And that will help with using the costs and the support load and all that good stuff along with that. Right, maybe you can share what we're doing and where you see where we're going in 2023.
Yeah, so I think we've spent like a lot of time building out a declarative framework, and we've made it super easy to engineer and upload features now. And we've seen like a huge explosion in actual storage costs, more like feature value has been uploaded to the service. And then so there's been a strong emphasis on efficiency. And then I think, yeah, in the future, aside from improving the efficiency, I think one of the things that kind of like really comes to mind is like when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And then so I think expanding like the number of ways that we can store and serve features and expand those use cases, especially when it comes to like some middle ground between batch online inference and this concept of taking something from offline to online and making it as seamless as possible. I think because we've acted out so many of the engineering components of feature storage, is that now feature storage has become like an abstract cost or idea that a lot of users don't really think about. And I think there's this unexplored area where like whatever it takes to make a model train well is not what you need to actually serve production. And then so there's this gap between what a machine learning practitioner thinks they need versus what is actually needed. I think if you think about it, for example, if you look at what would make a model perform well for personalization for you, it's like your entire purchase history and the entire purchase history of every other user that we've ever had the last 3 years. But the reality is that we don't need to store the data of every user we've had in the last 3 years in online feature storage. I think the next idea is like figuring out like proactively what users are likely to be coming back and what we should be storing. And I think like the next story is also how can we create features on demand in a really fast and predictable way? Because if you really think about it, there's only a couple of different data streams that you actually really need to adjust. And everything is some kind of time-based transformation on a collection of features or aggregations. And those are something that's like a solvable engineering problem to create those in real time. And I think that that would be like our next big challenge that I'd be pretty excited in tackling.
Yeah, that's very exciting. I'm personally hearing many companies talking about making more reactive models and moving more to real time or online, which is basically like what we're doing today in traditional software, right? When you are just registering to a website, you're getting the confirmation email right away. You don't wait a few minutes for a batch process to happen. So it's very exciting. And I have to say, like, your solution is very exciting. So I have to ask, are you planning to open source it?
We haven't really spent time thinking about that yet. Given that we're building on top of pretty well-known technology, storage engines, whatnot, we will be interested in looking at so many open source solutions out there, right? Like Feast and other, to see if what we can complement there. But no, not at this point, to answer your question directly.
Thank you. And now for the question I waited all along, all over the weekends and the days and the nights. Surprising question. In this episode, we're going to do flash questions. I'm going to ask 5 questions very quickly. You should take turns and answer them. Just answer the first answer you have in your mind. Are you ready? Pizza or burger?
Pizza.
Morning or evening?
Morning.
Prata or model?
Model.
Oh, production or lab?
Production.
Open source or SaaS?
Open source.
And the last question, TensorFlow or PyTorch?
PyTorch.
All right, that was fun. Thank you, guys.
And thank you for listening to AI InfraStories. Almog, did you have a good time?
Yes, definitely. Hamid, how can our listeners connect with us?
On LinkedIn, you can like our show and invite us to connect.
Wait. What about our Discord community?
Yes, you are welcome to join our community. The link is in the episode description.
Wait. What about our Twitter?
Yes, please subscribe on Twitter to hear when a new episode comes out.
Wait. What about rating us 15 out of 5 stars on Apple and Spotify?
Yes, please rate us with a nice 5-star on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
See you next episode.
Bye-bye.